Welcome to Whitley on Wine with your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist Robert Whitley.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Welcome to another week of Whitley on Wine, and I'm Robert, and this week we have a guest host, Lisa Redwine, the general manager and sommelier at the Shores Restaurant. How are you?
I am fantastic.
You know, we had you on the Gourmet Club before the Whitley on Wine show, and I thought it would be great to keep you over for the wine show because our guest today, our winemaker guest, is Rob Davis, the longtime winemaker at Jordan Winery. And you and I both have some, you know, longstanding memories of Jordan wine. And I asked you before we went on the air, what was your first experience with Jordan?
You know, I just remember way back when at a restaurant called Cypress Club in San Francisco where I was an assistant manager, and there were two full-time sommeliers there, and I used to help do inventory once in a while. And I just specifically remember the label, very distinctive, the Jordan.
It kind of looked like a Bordeaux label, didn't
Absolutely.
It?
And, you know, and especially living up in the Bay Area and going to Napa Valley and Sonoma quite often, it was always one of those that was highly regarded.
Yeah.
You know, it was one that it was always touted.
Well, you know, I'm originally from the East Coast, and I think my first taste of a Jordan Cabernet, which is what they're really famous for, they make Chardonnay
right.
as well, I was at a restaurant at the shore. I was on the eastern shore of Maryland, and they had a nice wine list, and somebody recommended the Jordan Cabernet. Never had it before. I believe it was the 1978 vintage. This was before I moved out here. And the first sip, I went, wow, wow.
Right.
Tell me about this wine. And, you know, and then, you know, at that time, I wasn't writing about wine. I was just an enthusiast and a collector and whatnot. And I've been a fan of the Jordan wines for years. And so without further ado, let's welcome Rob Davis. Rob, how are you?
Hey, doing well. It's a beautiful day here in Alexander Valley. We're probably about three to four days from our start of harvest this
year. You know, I was going to ask you about that. You have to be right on. Now, it's Chardonnay, obviously, that you're going to
Well, actually, where our Chardonnay comes from is Rush River. And it's amazing that that's about the same, because it's so much cooler there, that even though that's an early maturing grape, it comes in about the same time as our Merlot in the warmer Alexander Valley. So we definitely have a competing time for at the hopper there. Our Chardonnay comes in at night, and the Merlot comes in during the day, though. So there's
that's right.
Starts,
you know, here I'm thinking Cabernet, and you have a Bordeaux blend.
Correct.
Yeah. Exactly. Although it says Cabernet Sauvignon, you put Merlot in it.
Yeah, it has to be 75% to be Cabernet, of course. But it's been for so many years almost entirely the other percentage being Merlot. But as of recently, probably the last 4 years or so, we've been adding Petit Verdot, which has been just a great, wonderful grape that's been, as site specific as it is, it worked out very well on the hillsides of our vineyard.
Well, I can't wait to taste those wines. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today was the beginning, because I do have such positive memories of my very first taste of Jordan. And I seem to recall that when I asked about Jordan way back when, I was told that it was meant to be a wine that would sort of replicate Bordeaux, and it was really targeted for restaurants, and it was meant to be ready to drink when it was young. And I thought, you know, no better person to ask about that than you. You were there in the beginning. I think, 76 was your first year with Jordan?
Correct. Yeah.
So you've been there more than 30 years. What was the wine climate in California like at the time? And I don't mean the climate like the weather.
No,
just, you know, the wine scene. And what was your mission at Jordan when you first started making wine there?
That's a great question, because the industry has changed quite a bit. I mean, we were one of 300 wineries in California at the time, and now there's well over 3,000. But the consumption habits back when I just started working at Jordan. I just graduated out of UC Davis in 76 and came on.
No relation to you, though.
No, I wish. But we were just putting the roof on when I was doing the interview, and I thought, well, I hope it's ready by harvest time. But it was the consumption habits at that time were 80% white and 20% red. And here comes Tom Jordan, a single ownership, who's just enamored with Bordeaux. And I remember sitting in my office having personally carry up these first growths, you know, the Lafite, Latour, Margaux, Mouton. He bought that vintage up, and he wanted to just to compare it just to see the differences. But our marching orders were he wanted to produce a wine that emulate very much the great benchmark of Cabernet of Bordeaux. So it wasn't just, you know, third growths or fourth growths or something he just came along with. We were charged with at least trying to come up with something that had the similar palatability as the first growth, mm-hmm. which is, you know, that's a huge challenge because, you know, first you have to find the site and the climate, and then the site to match up with the climate. And fortunately, Tom Jordan, his background was geology, so it was he had the skill levels and the observation that was correct for making a really great Cabernet.
Well, you know, we now know that the Alexander Valley, where Jordan is located and where you have all of your acreage, hundreds of acres, is wonderful terroir for Cabernet Sauvignon-based wines. But did people know that then?
Not very many. I like to credit the Italians for knowing where the best soils were in the Alexander Valley, which we picked quite a few of those. And then as we were hit with phylloxera in the 80s, and we had to replant. We depended very much on those good old Italians for their fruit sourcing again, because we started out with the intention of being an estate vineyard. Mm-hmm. And that was, Tom Jordan was following very much the success story of the first growth. You own and operate and control your own fruit source. And so that was very, very important to him, to own and control the vineyard. So we bought 275 acres down the valley, and then added on to that later on in around 1996, we planted some vineyards out in the hills, which are very different soils, very rocky terrain that fortunately is very well drained in the parts that we have.
Yeah, and you have some volcanic tufa there?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You know, you can go literally 50 yards and you see a soil change. So there was a lot of uplifting, I think, over the millennium. The difference between the valley vineyards is more, and the hills are quite different. They're down the valley. You can have a wonderful gravel base, and then literally 50 yards away, you could have deep loam, and so the expression of the fruit would be quite different.
Now, you worked with the great consultant and former winemaker from BV, Andre Telichev, back then. What was his impression, and what thoughts did he share with you about the site that you had chosen?
Oh, God, his influence was huge. I don't credit myself for really making the wines, even today. I mean, he's so much in my blood. To work with a man that had over 50 harvests under his belt, and the balance of having his European experience as well as all the years of experience of making wine in California were just tremendous. So I traveled with him. I had the great fortune to travel with he and his wife throughout France, and particularly Bordeaux, for many, many years. And God, you think this guy was famous in California. He was a god in Europe. I mean, the red carpet couldn't be long enough, and to be able to be alongside of him and taste the tasting opportunities was tremendous. But he echoed over and over again, Robert, balance, 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 balance. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, he had this big, thick Russian accent that I think, fortunately, never lost. It was a wonderful charm of his, and he'd come up, and we'd taste wines, and he'd say, "Too damn much this, my dear sir." Hope I can say that word over the radio.
You're good. You're good
but
to
it
go.
Is expressive. I should say, "Too darn much this, too darn much that." And it was always balance. And it was, you know, looking at the oak, looking at the fruit tannins, looking at the aroma, looking at the bouquet, the finish. He says the finish is absolutely one of the most important things in a wine because that's the memory of the wine. It's the last thing that you're thinking about. So all those, the artistry as well as the enological talents that he had was tremendous in influencing and achieving the success.
He knew his stuff. Rob, we're going to have to take a short break, but Whitley on Wine will continue with Rob Davis of Jordan Winery following these messages.
Talk to me nice, you've got to wine me. Peel me a grape.
now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
I'm back, and I'm chatting with Rob Davis, the winemaker at Jordan Winery in the Alexander Valley of Sonoma County. And Lou is kind of rocking out on Diana Krall there. And with me here in the studio, I have Lisa Redwine, the sommelier and general manager of the Shores Restaurant in La Jolla Shores. And Rob, I have encouraged Lisa to jump in if she had a question. And I want to share a little story with you, too. Before we went on the air today, I was telling Lisa about, I think, my last visit to the winery when I saw you. I've been there several times, you know, a couple of luncheon events and things like that. But I told her about one visit that I made because the conventional wisdom was at one time that, well, the Jordan wines taste great when they're released, but they taste too good. They probably won't age. So I think I asked you about that at the time, and you pulled out an older vintage. It must have been 10, 12 years old, and decanted it. And I had a friend with me, and we were chatting, and poured a glass of wine. It tasted pretty good, and we kept our conversation going. And maybe a half an hour went by, or 45 minutes, and we noticed that we still had some wine left in the decanter, and you poured it again. And I don't remember the vintage, and that's not really important. And it was mind-blowing. It had just developed all of these incredible layers of complexity. Mm-hmm. And that sort of, you know, did it for me in terms of confirming that that these well-balanced wines do, in fact, age. And it was music to my ears to hear you talking about balance and how that was Andrei Telichev's mantra. Because I think for a while here in California, we lost sight of that concept of balance. I think it's the pendulum swinging back the other way. But you've been consistent with it through the years.
Yeah, and that has so much to do with the influence of pairing wine with food. You know, you want the balance of the wine. You don't want something so overt to completely overwhelm. And, you know, here Lisa's a sommelier, I'm sure, as well understands that principle, is that you've got a wine that may want a tasting, but, you know, paired with the wrong food, and it's not a pleasurable experience. And that was Tom Jordan's observation at the very beginning, that, you know, he wanted to have a really a restaurant worthy wine, where you know, a wine, you know, that could be perceived, at least a Cabernet of could be perceived as being still drinkable if you in 4 years or 5 years. And I think that the misconception is that, well, gosh, you're right, you're absolutely right, Robert. Well, this tastes great now, then mm-hmm. it's not going to age. Mm-hmm. And ageability seemed to be the only thing that was important when we first started it. I got a lot of tasting notes from wine writers that would not really say great things about the aroma, or, you know, they would, in fact, biting remarks about the tannin, and then get great scores. And Tom Jordan says, you know, I don't think that's appropriate. I want the wines to be, you know, the fruit to be identifiable in the nose, and have this tremendous finesse and finish that goes well with food.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, I think, you have the opportunity to come up here. It's really a great.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I drive up, I'm not jaded at all. Every time I drive up, I think, I feel like I'm coming back to Eden. It really is a beautiful place. But we have our own executive chef, and his job is to pair the food with the wines, and we've just had some great gastronomic experiences here.
You know, one of the things I've always liked about it, Lisa, by all means, jump in if you have a question. One of the things I've always liked about your Cabernet was it not only did it have balance, it had really interesting complexities, because you have a nice mix between the sweetness of ripe fruit and yet savory elements in the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And that pairs so nicely with mm-hmm. food.
Yeah, well, the way the picking is very, very important. The whole, again, the care that goes into all the vineyards and identifying each one of the elements that is kind of unique to that. And I think that's where the Petit Verdot is kind of fun to add into it, this kind of blueberry character. But it's I think tasting experiences, particularly when you have a 2 hour or an hour experience to enjoy a wine rather than just, you know, your quick 3 second taste. And then those subtleties, those nuances play such an important factor in the enjoyment of the wine.
Well, you know, just as food trends have changed, so have wine trends, especially with Cabernet. Have you changed a lot of direction at Jordan, or are you still pretty consistent to your original vision?
That's a great question, Lisa. I I'd like to think that we're constantly trying to improve every year, but consistency has been a hallmark for Jordan since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of approach to the wine, again, getting back to balance, finesse, elegance. Finesse and elegance used to be derogatory words for Cabernet when I first started here. It was like, you know, that connoted feminine wine, which was the opposite that Cabernet was perceived as. And now you hear elegance and finesse as being real positive descriptors, but we've maintained that. I think that where we are progressing in terms of Cabernet production is continuing to improve upon the fruit source.
Mm-hmm.
So we will maintain Alexander Valley, but like I said, it's Alexander Valley has a tremendous amount of variety to it, and a lot has to do with, again, the millennium, the change in the soil.
You have hillsides and valley floor and
yes, and so we're looking for, you know, John Jordan has come on now, and gosh, he was like, I think 5 years old when I first started here, and now he's my boss. But he's just so much like his dad, you know, this entrepreneurial curious nature that, and always wants to improve upon things. So I said, well, John, you know, certainly the winemaking, we're continuing to improve upon the methodology, but far more important is the fruit source. So I have been given the opportunity and the autonomy to really to go out, and if I find a better block, regardless of the authorship, I can get it. And I tell you, when you come up again, both Lisa and Robert, when you come up again, I would love to show you some of the developments we're doing now.
Oh, fantastic.
It's really exciting.
You know, I may have to take you up on that. You know, we focused on your Cabernet, and you're really famous for your Cabernet, but you also make a very nice Chardonnay. Do you have a specific philosophy that you can articulate about Chardonnay?
Yes. It's similar surprisingly, it's similar to the Cabernet, and that balance, again, is key. And if I could just add, Lisa, one observation I just quickly thought of is what has changed and what has been consistent with this. What's changed in the industry is a lot of, I wouldn't say lack of attention, but attention more to picking later and later, and you've seen the alcohols grow. But acidity has dropped off.
Right.
And, in fact, I was having dinner with Veronique Joanne, and who said, you know, we're talking about global warming and the effect it's had on Burgundy. She says, we haven't chaptalized in over 10 years, but now we're seeing acidity drop off, and acidity is so important to our balance.
Right.
And I couldn't echo that. I mean, I said, God, this just was perfect words to my ears. I said, yes. And I said, it's so important to the balance of combination of food and wine to have that nice acid component. And that's being, I see that as a trend being, it's being less and less. And so that has been an important part of it. So our picking in terms of maturity, we're still picking at sugars that, in terms of the French would look at it, we would look at alcohol. So our alcohols have already maintained well below 14,
mm-hmm.
which when we came on, cost 13.8 would be high for us. Now in this industry, it's...
I have a question in regards to that. You know, 15 years ago, Cabernets in particular were so much lower in alcohol than they are today. How do you find that affecting the potential ageability of the wines, the Cabernets that are produced today versus 20 years ago?
The alcohol is perceived, I think, by many as the most important part of aging in combination with tannins.
Uh-huh.
But I found in my experience and my tasting experiences that really it's the acidity that will hold up those wines much better than alcohols. In fact, without it, they fall apart very, very quickly. I had the opportunity of tasting Andre's, even, you know, after he died in 94. BV had a tasting of all his wines, even going back to the 50s, and those wines were still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not these big alcoholic wines, but they had this beautiful balance of acid. The tannins had already resolved, and they were, but the fruit was still there. And that really taught me a lot. Of course, Andre was right when he told me about this a long time ago, but the school of Andre has been vindicated so many times with me.
Yeah, you know, I will echo that a little bit. I've seen higher alcohol wines from Europe, believe it, of all places, you know, in the south of France in particular. And, but they have the acid balance. You know, I'm not going to get off on an alcohol tangent. I would like to see them come down. You know, when I see Syrah that's almost 16% alcohol, I kind of recoil a little bit. You know, I'm not one of those people who says, well, it's got to be under 14. Mm-hmm. But when you get up to 15.9, you know, 16.2, then I start to get a little antsy about the alcohol levels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you asked about the Chardonnay and where I kind of deviated over to the acidity, but mm-hmm. that's where our Chardonnay, we used to be Alexander Valley, and that has probably been the biggest change. You know, certainly we'd been consistent with the Cabernet, but the Chardonnay, we did change appellations, and where we used to be 100% Alexander Valley, now we're 100% Russian River. Mm-hmm. And that, again, soil types have been played a part in that, but the minerality and acidity has been a really big part of our Chardonnay, to the point where we actually back off on the malolactic just because we don't want to lose the acidity. We mm-hmm. want that brightness. Right. That
and also the minerality. I mean, I am so happy to hear a renewed emphasis on that. I just did a column for the Creator Syndicate on Chablis, for example, and one of the things I love about Chablis is the minerality. And more, especially with the vineyard-designated Chardonnays, Nickel and Nickel, for example, and some of the others, we're seeing this emphasis on minerality and balance in the wine, and I, from a personal standpoint, I'm very fond of that. I like that, and I'm glad to see the pendulum swing that way. Not that I can enjoy a fatter Chardonnay, but I like that minerality and acid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very Burgundian. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those wines. We don't have limestone, and where we do in California, unfortunately, is not the same climate as Burgundy, but I just went to a Burgundy tasting in San Francisco, and 12 gorgeous Burgundies that just, you know, had this wonderful mineral finish that I just love. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have the limestone initially to expose that. You just have to pick it at the right time and have it in a cool enough place to do that. But
well, and aren't there different expressions of minerality depending on the soil?
Yes, and and I think they're expressions of the terroir where, you know, like a Sancerre, a Sauvignon Blanc, and grown in like a silicate or slate soils, you can get the minerality. A lot of it has to do with a well-drained soil. So if you have a deep, loamy soil, that tends to not give you that same expression.
You know, talking about ageability in wines, how do you think your Chardonnays age? You know, you've compared them to Meursault, and I love...
And you got 30 seconds, Rob.
Yeah.
She threw that in right at the end.
You know, I just read an article on that, and that it probably is most single, and white wines, the most single important attribute is acidity, and that makes wines age. And so ours, I've had 10-year-old Jordan Chardonnays from Russian River. It just are phenomenal. They're just really wonderful.
And on that note, I want to thank you, Rob Davis, for joining us on Whitley on Wine this week. And Lisa Redwine, thank you for
hanging in
after the Gourmet Club to talk to Rob with me. That's it for this week. I'm Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine. Until next week, ciao.